We're reading from the book of Exodus, chapter 4, verses 1 to 14. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Then the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" He said, "A staff." And the Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." And Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Then the Lord said, "Put your hand inside your cloak." So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was leprous, like snow. "Now put it back into your cloak," he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, "If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first miraculous sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. And the water you take from the river will become blood on the ground." Moses said to the Lord, "O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since have you spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." And the Lord said to him, "Who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight and makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say." And Moses said, "O Lord, please send someone else to do it." Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, "What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you." We just ask the Lord's blessing on his word.
Well, good morning, everyone. I don't usually get the opportunity for those joining us online. You will have been spared the pain, but I don't usually get the opportunity to sit up there or be up there much. I've got to tell you, it's a pretty prime position getting to hear the people of God sing at you. It's one of those things that if I got to choose, I'd move my seat from here to there, because I don't even care if I sit behind them. Just being able to hear people sing like that would be fantastic and each week, but there it is. Well, we're finishing off our series this morning on being an overcomer. Who remembers back to the first week? For those that were here or watched online, we looked at overcoming the... there's no homework. Overcoming the comparison trap. All right, and Debbie shared with us about making sure that we stayed in our lane and not allowing ourselves to be distracted by those to our left or to our right. A couple of things that stuck in my mind from that first week. Debbie said, when the comparison begins, contentment ends. When the comparison begins, contentment ends. When we start to compare between ourselves and what God is doing in someone else's life, we start to become discontent with our lot and what we're supposed to be doing. The other thing that I remember her saying was that comparing either makes us inferior or superior to everybody else around us, and that neither is honoring to God. So when we start to compare, that we're either trying to put ourselves above or below someone else, when God, neither of them is... neither of them is honoring. The second week we looked at overcoming the comforts of apathy. And we said that we need to not just become comfortable, but allow there to be a holy discomfort within our existence so that we can fight for what God has for each of us. And the other thing that I want to remind you of from that week is that we said that rather than trying to make a little difference in a whole bunch of places, let's make a big difference in a few. Let's make a big difference in a few places. and allowing ourselves to do what God has created us to do, which then allows somebody else to do what they are created to do. Leaving it for somebody else is like leaving the washing up, right? It never, oh, someone else will do it. I think it's like cleaning a teenager's room. Someone else hasn't ever turned up at my house yet. So I have to leave it to my kids to clean their own room because someone else is not going to be there. Someone else has never knocked at the front door of my place. Although someone else has come in the form of their mother from time to time when it's just got too much. That wouldn't have happened in anyone else's place, I'm sure. It has, I'm sure. Last week Debbie shared with us about overcoming the lies and of labels, and the labels that we put on ourselves, and the labels we allow others to put on us, and the words, the negative words sometimes that we put on ourselves, and that we allow others to put on us. What a challenge it was, and I want to encourage you, Debbie. It was a great word for us last week. And the thing that's gone around in my head like a bit of a pinball in a pinball machine this week, over and over again, is a label might describe you, but your identity in Christ defines you. Like this morning, when I was sharing about a friend of mine and what they did, that's not who they are, right? When I was introducing you to somebody in the meeting this morning, I told you what they did. It's not who they are. What I was remiss in saying is whose they are, right? We often, and I'm guilty of it just like everyone else, oh, so who are you? What do you do? And all of a sudden, that defines who you are and where you fit and everything else that comes with that. And then often, and I've actively tried not to do it this week after last week's sermon, we use these four-letter words that make us inferior. I'm just. I'm only this. Or I'm just that. You're not. If we're allowing our identity in Christ to define us, then we're not only and just anything. We are who we are, whatever our name might be, created in the image of God. Doesn't that change our framework of who we are and whose we are? Because we're not defined by what we have done or not done. The other thing that Debbie said was that God can use our past to change someone's future. How often has it been that somebody has come across your path and you're able to minister alongside them by God's grace because of something that's gone on in your past? And you've already journeyed that journey and you can show them the way to the throne of grace in the midst of all of that. Well, this morning we're looking at overcoming fear. There are plenty of people who are afraid of things. It's not something that we put on a neon sign, is it, above our head, that we're scared of something or we're afraid of something. I personally couldn't find a big enough neon sign for all the critters and bugs and things that I'm not massively fond of. A few weeks ago, our church went and had a barbecue up the dam, and there was livestock there. Kookaburra, what is it called?
That's not livestock, it's just wildlife.
Okay, wildlife, let's call it that. It could have been livestock, mate.
It wasn't, that's like sheep and cattle, that's livestock. Wildlife is the bird you saw.
Well, there was a bird. And it could have been livestock. It was as big as, like a pterodactyl, as Kookaburra. It's amazing when, I'm not a massive fan of any sort of critter, and most people got a fair source of entertainment in the fact that I was showing bravery beyond my years in moving to the furthest point away from this thing. What they didn't see was somebody if there was a snake there, I would have burnt the thing down. They are just not my cup of tea. Anyway, I was super brave. There was a possum there, and I'm already like, oh, goodness. And I'm just trying to ignore the possum, ignore the possum. Then one of my dear friends from church, not naming any names, went and put out some bread for the kookaburra. I'm like, what are you doing? And then it actually came down and, oh, it was just the worst. It seems to create inside us this knot that of panic that, and, you know, everyone else saw a beautiful Australian bird called the kookaburra. I thought it was a pterodactyl. It was just ginormous. But it changes inside of our minds, right? What exactly things are because of the fear that we have. Are you afraid of things? Do you make them bigger than they actually are? Most of you would know, and those online, most of you would know that I'm in the Rural Fire Brigade. They find entertainment in my love of critters as well. We went out to a massive pile burn the other week, and the person that I was with said, "Watch out for snakes," and just walked away. That is not even funny. But they thought it was hilarious that all of a sudden, just drop a hint, drop a couple of words, and then walk away. Man, I was back in that truck with the window up. I didn't want to be anywhere near it. There was never a snake. But the thought of there being one, it was just too much. Too much. We often battle, don't we? We often battle with what might be rather than what is. We often battle with what might be rather than what is. Most of us battle with fear at some point. You may be braver than me, and God bless you this morning if you are, when it comes to critters and bugs and things. I have had bugs fly on me, and mate, I can turn into Jackie Chan like the best of them, just to get them away from me. But then there's others who get afraid of, you know, storms. I love them. I'll go outside in the middle of a storm and take photos. Others won't go anywhere near it. Some people would say that they're afraid of loss. Maybe it's loss of health, or afraid of losing your job or control. Or sometimes it's a fear of failure. I'm not going to try that. I'm not going to step out. I'm not going to do anything because if I fail, then I don't measure up and I'm not good enough. And then all of a sudden, I'm just me, little old me who might be a failure. For some of us, it's a fear of rejection. I'm not going to go across the room and say hello to someone because what happens if they reject me? What happens if I get left out again? What happens if I'm not good enough? What about the fear of the unknown? Anyone ever had that? The fear of the unknown, and then it might be to do with a good thing or a bad thing, we don't know, but it's unknown, so we're not prepared to step out in faith. Well, how are you ever going to do extraordinary things for God if we're going to be captured by fear? We have to overcome it, right? Here's a story this morning that Kate read for us of Moses interacting with God in the Old Testament. I take great comfort in this story that I'm actually in good company. Because see, when God asks you to do things and when he asks me to do things, how often do we come up with the list of excuses as to why you don't need to choose me? I'm happy to say yes, but as long as it's yes for them. Or you want me to do what? But I can't do this and I can't do that. It doesn't include me. Surely there's somebody better. You've had conversations like that, haven't you? Or is it just me? You see, I think one of the greatest things that most people worry about is the fear of public speaking. I offer regularly for someone to come and take my chair on a Sunday morning. Most people say, no, 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 no. They're not interested, right? They're not interested in public speaking. Yet it's something that you have to do. I was at an event yesterday, and whilst the person who was on directly before me was speaking, the facilitator of the space said, Wes, can you share with us straight after this? And I'm like, sure. Had no notice. I could have had excuses. I could have said, surely there's somebody else. But instead I said yes. Not exactly sure what I said, but we got there, right? We talked about, but it's about sometimes the fear even gets those that do it all the time. It can be something that's familiar to us and we still get fearful about it. I had 93 seconds notice. Man, it might have looked like a duck on the outside, but there was some paddling going on, I can tell you, underneath the water. And then I'm reminded of this verse from Paul to his apprentice, Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 1. Timothy, remember this. For God did not give you a spirit of timidity, a spirit of fear. Another translation says a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of sound mind. What a great reminder. Fear is not what defines us. If we want to overcome fear, it's not what defines us, because it's not who we are. We need to be reminded whose we are. If we are created in the image of God and we are His, then we need not be fearful. We need not be afraid. Some say that fear is the opposite to faith. But I think it goes one step further. Fear is faith in all the wrong things. Fear is faith in all the wrong things. What I want you to know this morning is that God brought you here today to experience His presence, to hear from His word, and to be set free from the bondage of fear, because God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and sound mind. If God's going to help us to overcome fear, let's start by defining what fear is. Fear is placing our faith in a whole bunch of what ifs. Look at the story of Moses this morning. Mate, trust me. Throw that stick down. Put your hand in your cloak. What was God doing there? It wasn't any sort of magical thing. He was trying to show to Moses, I've got this. Trust me, I've got this. Have you ever tried to help somebody down from a ladder when they're on top of a roof? I got this. There's fear in the person up there of trust, right? There's fear. Because they're putting their trust and their faith into somebody that they can't see. Often. You see, I've shared before here that I think faith is a mathematical equation. Faith is a mathematical equation. It's trusting something and then putting it into action. It's trust plus action equals faith. You can't have faith in something if you never put that into action. How often do we trust God but we don't put our faith in Him to take the next step? What about Peter on the water? He could have sat in that boat forever for the rest of that story and said, yep, I trust Him. Absolutely. I could walk on water, but I'll trust Him to make that happen. But instead, he had to put his trust into action, take one step out, keep his eyes fixed on Jesus. And then the extraordinary occurred. Throughout Scripture, we see time and time again where God promises His people that He was going to be there for them, that He was going to lead them, He was going to carry them. Even at the end of Matthew's Gospel, he records in there that Jesus said these words, "Surely I will be with you always to the end of the age." That's nothing different to what He'd promised Moses when they exited out of Israel. He exited out of Egypt. Thank you. When He led Israel out of Egypt was where I was heading with that, and it didn't happen. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate that. Nothing different. He promised Moses. But what did Moses put his faith in? What if? I can't. Somebody else. But. He had the list. What are your what ifs? Let's not answer that this morning. But maybe you've got what ifs. Maybe you've got doubts that come into your mind. Maybe they're just seeds. Maybe you've been putting water and fertilizer on them for years. Do we put our focus in our what ifs, or do we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus? Why do our what ifs matter so much? They seem to, don't they? They seem to almost be so loud. Sometimes I think our what ifs are louder. We allow them to be louder than the promises that God gives to us. They seem to take our focus and attention. You ever tried to talk to a teenager when they've got headphones in? God bless you if you get through. And if you've worked out how to get through, fill me in afterwards. I'm guilty of it too sometimes. If I'm watching something on an iPad or whatever, and Debbie speaks to me, I'm like, I haven't heard it, right? Because it's so loud in the headphones sometimes, or they're those noise cancelling. I don't know how that works. I'm still trying to work that out. But it stops communication from happening. What is it in our lives that we're allowing to stop the communication that God is wanting to speak into our lives? The promises that are sure. Is it that we struggle to trust God, or that we're putting our faith, that is trust plus action, into things that are our own what ifs? I want to encourage you this morning to be honest for a moment and truthful within yourself. Acknowledge where fear is, and if it's in because of our what ifs are louder than our faith is in God. Now, here's a start to a sentence, and I need you to finish it quietly. I'm not trusting God with. I'm not trusting God with. whatever that might be. Let's give it a name. You might want to write it down. I'm not trusting God with. I'm trying to do it in my own strength. I'm trying to do it on my own. You see, trust and faith is often about surrender as well. It's not just trusting that God can do it. It's not just putting faith in it, but it's saying, like Jesus taught his disciples to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done. It's not my will, not what I want to happen, not my desires, but yours. Everything that we read in Matthew chapter 6 in the Lord's Prayer is about an act of surrender. Your kingdom come. Your will be done. What are we trusting God with this morning? What are we struggling to trust God with this morning? Maybe you have sung a chorus like I've sung a chorus many times in my life if I was being super transparent. Some to Jesus I surrender, some to Him I freely give. When that's not what he really asks of us, the hymn writer didn't write some. He said all. Al, when you say all, Wes, do you really mean, yeah, includes that. Oh, but what about, yep, includes that too. Maybe there's other times in your life where you're feeling like your faith is on fire and nothing's going to stop you, and you sing, all to Jesus I surrender, all to Him I begrudgingly give. Right? There are times in my life where I'm like, okay, how freeing it is, friends, when we can sing both lines together. All to Jesus I surrender, all to Him I freely give. I'm prepared to surrender all to Him and see what He will do in that space. For some people, when they are afraid, there's usually a couple of different responses, aren't there? When you're fearful, you either freeze, fight, or flight. There's a couple of others as well, which we're not going to worry about today. But they're the three that happen. Does that happen in our spiritual walk as well? Where we become fearful, we either freeze, and like, if I just stand still, maybe God will ask the guy beside me, and his requests on me, if I just lean to the, you know, it'll hit someone else. Maybe we run. Maybe we take off, like I did with the kookaburra. Maybe we fight and wrestle and say, what about me? What about what I want? Which one of those is where we find ourselves this morning? We're in good company though, aren't we? When Moses is asked by God to speak on his behalf to Pharaoh on behalf of the people of Israel. And he says, oh, look, mate, I've got to be honest. I'm not your guy. I'm not your guy. There's got to be somebody else better. Because it's not just that I'm not good at it, but I'm slow of tongue. I've got physical limitations which stop me from doing what you're wanting me to do. Now let's get practical this morning. When we have our deepest fears, we need to sometimes acknowledge our fear and trust God anyway. Acknowledge our fear and trust that God has got it anyway. You might be like many out there who have observed, they may have been the young person that did this. This isn't happening to me. I'm not listening to you. Have you ever seen a young person do that? Maybe that's us in our spiritual walk. We don't want to acknowledge the thing that's happening right in front of us. If we look in the Psalms, in Psalm 56, we read in there a verse of scripture from the psalmist David. David was terrified, but he chose to put his trust in God, his faith in God, when he said this: "In God whose word I praise, in God I trust and am not afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?" David asks, what can mere mortals do to him? If we're honest, they could kill him. But he kept his trust in God. God is on the throne. His will shall be done. Let's keep our focus on him. Earlier in the service, for those that have just joined us online, we sang a chorus. I'm not sure if you joined us by this point. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face. And the things of earth grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. If we want to overcome fears this morning, then we need to seek God until he takes away our fears. That's exactly what David did. The man who had a lot to fear on earth focused on growing closer to God. He writes in another one of the Psalms, in Psalm 34, "I sought the Lord and he took away all of my fears. I sought the Lord and he delivered me from all of my fears." How did this happen? Because he kept his eyes on Jesus and the things of earth that could have distracted him grew strangely dim. Do we live out this verse from 2 Timothy 1? That God does not give us a spirit of fear, but he gives us a spirit of power and of love and of sound mind. We might have a temporary fear, something that's new, something that we haven't had in our life before. It's something brand new. Well, maybe we need to know that God is able. What does Hebrews chapter 3 tell us? Cancel that. Ephesians chapter 3. Cheers, I'm on fire this morning. Made two mistakes. It's okay. Ephesians chapter 3. He's able. More than able. Exceedingly more than able to accomplish more than we could ask or imagine. What's the old song that we used to sing? He is able, more than able to accomplish what concerns me today? Do you believe that? Or is that just a nice song that comes up on the screen so I'll sing along? Do we believe in those words that we sang earlier in the service? For those joining us online, we sang the chorus, "On Christ the solid rock I stand. All other ground is sinking sand." Is that something that we believe? Or is that just, "Well, they were nice words. Let's sing along." We need to seek the Lord in all that we do. Grow close to Him, know Him, know His Word, and watch Him deliver us from the greatest fear and the biggest what if you can imagine. He will deliver us from it. John Wesley, the founder of the Wesleyan Methodist movement, says, I've never known more than 15 minutes of anxiety or fear. Whenever I feel fearful emotions overtaking me, I close my eyes and thank God that He is still on the throne, reigning over everything, and I take comfort in His control over all the affairs of my life. What a great goal to work towards. Not sure that I've shared His experience, though, at this point. 15 minutes is not very long at all, but I'm probably overachieving. I've done way more than 15 minutes at a time. So how do we overcome fear? How do we overcome the lies and the labels? How do we overcome a spirit of apathy? How do we overcome comparing to others? By singing a song that we sang earlier in the service, and we're going to sing it again now, that says, I need Thee every hour, most gracious Lord. I need You more than yesterday. I need You more than words can say. I need You, Lord. I can't do this on my own. Yes, I'm scared. Yes, I'm afraid. Yes, there is unknowns, but I know that You are with me. What does the psalmist say? Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. So we're going to sing in just a moment those words. I'd invite you to join with us as we sing them. And know that you too can put your faith in a God who wants to do the exceedingly more than you could ask or imagine in your life.